Today on Annenberg Radio News.
There's oftentimes people come by and just give me a dollar or give me whatever change they have in their pocket, and that's fine. That's the whole point.
How one man puts his business profits in the hands of his customers.
Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, October 21st, 2014. I'm Tiffany Walton.
And I'm Rocky Natha. The trial of Javier Bolden, the man charged with the shooting deaths of two USC graduate students in 2012, continued in downtown Los Angeles today. We have ATVN's Olivia LaVoice on the phone for an update.
Hi there. Okay, so first off, the trial started off today with the DA playing a very brief audio recording that is from a phone call from the night of the shootings. And in that phone call, it is between Bolden and an unidentified female. And while most of the recording is, you can't really make out what he's saying, at the very end, you can hear him say, "I just killed someone." Now, the DA also put Detective Carrion from the LAPD, who's the lead detective in the case, on the stand. And Detective Carrion played a taped interview between himself and Bolden when Bolden was first arrested. Now, for a majority of the interview, Bolden is not budging whatsoever, but eventually at the very end, he admits that he does know what crimes that they're asking him about, and he admits that he was there the night of the shootings, but that he did not pull the trigger, but that Brian Barnes did. He then goes on to say that he has no idea why Barnes killed the two USC students and that Barnes didn't offer an explanation and that he simply walked up to the vehicle and opened fire on the two victims. Bolden also confirmed that the only thing taken from the car was two iPhones belonging to the victims. The DA then also put Detective Carrion back on the witness stand where Detective Carrion said that he had a police informant pose as Bolden's cellmate and gain his trust, and that they have taped recordings between the informant and Bolden in which Bolden does talk about the night of the crime, and he gives details in that recording, such as describing the blue BMW that the victims were in. And when the informant asks Bolden if the USC students saw him, he replies by saying, "No, they're dead." He also then says that he himself did not get a look at the students because it was raining.
Thank you. Thanks so much for checking in with us on that, Olivia. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you.
Los Angeles Unified School District's problems don't seem to be coming to an end. Students' schedules are still not fully under control, and now community members are pushing for changes to the electronic oversight system. Andy Vasoyan reports.
Just days after Superintendent John Daisy's resignation, community members and parents are now calling for an investigation into MISIS, the school scheduling system. This morning they asked for school board members to audit and investigate the effectiveness of the system and quickly resolve current technical issues. MISIS keeps track of information like student grades and class schedules. Parents and students are complaining that the schedules are wrong and grades that have been entered into the system are disappearing. Khalid Al-Alim, the father of a student at Crenshaw High, is worried that class scheduling problems can have a negative impact on the students' futures.
If we are unable to get official transcripts, official grades from my daughter's high school and get the classes that she needs, if she's unable to graduate on time, she may be denied the opportunity to attend a Cal State University. This is absolutely unacceptable.
Al-Alim said that fixes had been promised, but still have yet to be delivered. Parents want the school district to do a better job of accommodating the hardware and software needs of their schools. The LAUSD will be meeting behind closed doors for the rest of the day to deliberate on the request and on how to resolve current issues with MISIS. Andy Vasoyan, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA Unified School Board approved a temporary contract for Ramon Cortinez as the new district superintendent. Cortinez began his third stint as head of LAUSD yesterday. He's replacing John Daisy, who resigned under pressure last week amid problems with class scheduling and the district's iPad problem. The board unanimously approved Cortinez's new salary at $300,000 a year. That's $50,000 less than Daisy. The contract runs through next June. Watching a film shoot on LA's city streets may be one perk of living near Hollywood, but that sight isn't as common as it once was. A new report released today shows that while television production numbers have increased, fewer feature films are being shot in LA. The figure comes from Film LA, a private non-profit organization that coordinates and manages permits for on-location movies, TV shows, and commercials. I spoke to Philip Sokolowski from Film LA about the report. Why exactly is there a difference between feature filmmaking and then television production?
In the case of feature film production, features being down is not all that surprising when you consider that the film and TV tax credit that was designed to attract those projects was basically, over its five-year period, increasingly devoted to TV.
What are some of the practical elements of how we consider and rate production activity?
Currently, Film LA tracks only on-location film activity, and that is activity permitted through our office on behalf of the city, the county, or one of the other locations we represent. Notable about our data is it does not include soundstage-based production or anything that takes place in a studio backlot. So a large portion of the production picture in Los Angeles is not represented in our data.
Why is it important? Why do we care about these figures? Why do we care that production does happen in LA? How does it make a difference to the city and its people?
Film production is a major economic driver for the region. So not just on the feature side of things, but in television as well. It employs over 100,000 people in the Los Angeles area, not to mention all of the ancillary jobs that are created when film and TV crews find work. And when TV and film production do not do well, that directly translates into lost work opportunities for locals, many of whom have had to look out of state for those opportunities as other states and nations step up their competition for this business.
How is web production changing and impacting production activity?
Growth in the web-based TV category, which is something we track, has been enormous over the past couple of years. It's in the thousands of percent in terms of the increase we've seen. Now, TV reality production on a project-by-project basis don't have the economic benefit that, say, a scripted series would. But with close to 4 in 10 of every television production day we see being reality-based, it's important not to overlook the contributions that category makes to not only our filming numbers, but also to the region as a whole.
That was Philip Sokolowski with Film LA.
Legendary fashion designer Oscar de la Renta died Monday night after nearly a decade-long battle with cancer. He was 82. Iqbal Alsanya has more on the iconic designer's legacy.
Oscar de la Renta is known for his romantic and feminine designs, dressing American first ladies like Hillary Clinton to fashion-savvy actresses such as Sarah Jessica Parker. Fashion buyer Najla El-Nafisi met de la Renta on her first buying trip in 2012. He was a renowned designer, but Al-Nafisi describes him as a genuine and humble man.
If you look at his designs, you can tell a lot about his personality. He stressed on designing clothes that made women feel superior, very powerful. He wanted to portray a strong, independent woman. He never created dresses that were too short or too revealing. He liked modest women. He liked modest people, so he tried to present that in his designs, and I think that says a lot about him as a person.
De La Renta's last high-profile client was George Clooney's wife. He He made her wedding dress last month. Kevin Jones is a curator at LA's Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising Museum. He is positive De La Renta's designs will be just as inspirational 100 years from today.
We have exhibited Oscar De La Renta pieces here. We have collected and we have wanted them. We have asked people for them because the clothing is so beautiful. It's not just beautifully designed, but he had great integrity with his workmanship. Whether it was, you know, a bathing ensemble, very casual to wear, you know, in the south of France, or a red carpet ball gown to wear, you know, at the Oscars here in Hollywood.
Weeks before his death, De La Renta appointed Peter Copping as creative director of his company. His first Oscar De La Renta collection will be shown during New York Fashion Week in February 2015. Iqbala Sana, Annenberg Radio News.
It's another sunny day in SoCal. Temperatures hit the high 70s today, but will cool down to the low 60s tonight. Over the next few days, we can expect partly cloudy skies with temperatures reaching the low 80s.
Later on Annenberg Radio News, we take a bite out of a new LA phenomenon, urban farming.
One food truck owner decided not to price his fruit and veggie drinks, allowing customers to pay what they want.
I'm Ryan Trainer. I'm one of the co-founders of the Pingles Truck. We're going to park today at Jefferson and McClintock right here at USC. So we're going to be here pretty much all day, sun up to sundown. Usually you'll see food trucks centered around something that people crave. For myself, I kind of wanted to just simply introduce fresh fruits and fresh vegetables. We offer a 16-ounce cup for both the fresh squeezed juices and the vegan smoothies. People usually pay between 4 to 8 is kind of an average range. We say that with the understanding that there is flexibility. Sort of whatever you can contribute is fine by us. That's kind of where we went into the flexible pricing model. It allows us to take something that's usually reserved as a luxury item and kind of bring it to the masses.
My name is Leah Takala, and I stopped by Pingles today to get a fresh juice. It's my first time, and I think they're awesome for letting us pick our own price. I compared it to another place that I get juices from. I gave them an extra dollar, though, since they're letting us pick.
There's oftentimes people come by and just give me a dollar or give me whatever change they have in their pocket, and that's fine. That's the whole point. Obviously, I can't do that for everybody because I'd be out of business pretty quickly. But, you know, I could do it for the people that need it. I certainly lose money on some people. Some people we break completely even on, and some people we make a little bit more to cover those other losses. And so it averages out. And I want to keep the movement going and kind of keep the idea that we can put the financial decision in the hands of our customers as opposed to me dictating. I like to see it as a hand up, not a hand out.
This sound portrait was produced by Jessica Harrington.
Urban farming is becoming increasingly popular in cities like Los Angeles, Pasadena, and Long Beach. JJ Maldonado speaks with a local farmer on what seems to be a growing trend.
From the rooftop of a 5-story building in downtown LA, one can see buildings in every direction, except one.
Up in this whole general area, we have some sage, thyme, mint, oregano, cilantro, tarragon, basil, rosemary, a lot of herbs we can grow up here.
That's Lowell Frank, an urban farmer with Farmscape Gardens. He works on this garden 2 days a week, tilling the beds of vegetables and fruits, which are used for dining at the club.
You would think that in a rooftop like downtown Los Angeles, you wouldn't have many pests or like diseases, but this is probably one of my more problematic gardens.
The LA City Council today said it wants to expand urban farming. On Friday, the city will host Food Day, which is aimed at the public to eat healthier. Christian Sanfuene, a certified fitness chef, says when we eat local food, we know where it comes from and what goes into it.
If they're more local, you don't have to pick it too early. You pick it the right time. So the regular supermarket should be getting it from those places.
Farmer Frank also believes urban farming can help with drought issues. He says vegetables require less water than grass, and they taste better. He says urban farming is becoming more popular. 4 years ago, 1 out of 200 homes might have been urban farming, where now, he says 1 out of 75. JJ Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
Today, U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan gave a keynote address at the White House Early Learning Summit. We are on the phone with ATVN reporter Tanner Makaris, who's there now. Hi, Tanner. Tell us a little bit about today's event.
So Duncan talked for a little over 15 to 20 minutes about education, and he stressed the point that it is unfair to any child in the United States of America, and for that point in the world, unfair that there is no opportunities for early education for everybody. Duncan believes that it is something that needs to be completely countrywide. And as he quoted many times throughout his speech, children are our most important investment. And you could not stress that enough. Not only monetarily, it's also a 7-to-1 return on early education with children in terms of later on in life. The U.S. ranks between 20 and 25th in early education with other developed countries in the world, which Duncan quoted saying is horrendous and is unacceptable to have. Duncan wants to use motivation from the civil rights and gay rights movement in order to propel the early education into the spotlight and not wait 40 years until we can solve the problem. He says it starts with today and starts with family, and once again ended his speech by saying children are the United States' most great investment.
And Tanner, why does Duncan support early education?
Now, Duncan supports early education because he believes, as well as studies that back up and show, that it is a great kickstart in terms of educating the younger children in America. Kids in third grade, after studies that were done by the United States, kids in third grade are on average able to read way better at a fifth grade level versus a child who did not take part in early education, would not test into that level, would test lower.
Tanner, thank you so much for this report. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
Today, CalPERG, a public interest research group, released a report on big money's domination of the national and California primaries. But according to some analysts, the report suggests are difficult to implement. Tim Vernon reports.
CalPERG's report shows that just under two-thirds of all documented candidate contributions come from donors who contribute $1,000 or more. Layla Pedersen, a state program manager at Common Cause, one of CalPERG's partner organizations, says candidates who relied on contributions from ordinary citizens are often at a disadvantage compared to those relying on large, often out-of-district, donors.
In this California primary, just 864 large donors in California contributed as much as at least 34,000 small donors.
She says CalPERG's recent study of 9 members of Congress up for re-election in this year's midterm is especially telling.
7 of the 9 members raised 20% or less of their funds from within their district.
Jessica Levinson, a campaign finance expert and professor of law at the Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, says programs to empower small donors can run up against significant challenges.
The public financing programs exist in a world of unlimited independent expenditures, so they don't necessarily limit the amount of money that is seen in a campaign. It can just change who is spending the money.
She says that legislative fixes are equally difficult to implement.
In the short term, it's not about, there are not that many legislative fixes that you can implement. There are some things you can do, but most of the tools have been declared unconstitutional.
Tim Vernon, Annenberg Radio News.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security announced it will add new restrictions on flights coming from countries struggling with Ebola outbreaks. Starting tomorrow, travelers from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea are required to enter the U.S. through 1 of 5 airports with enhanced screening protocols, including temperature checks. locally Los Angeles City Council members Paul Krikorian and Mitch Englander urged residents today to stop worrying about Ebola and instead to get ready for flu season.
A Japanese company's plans to build a light rail manufacturing plant in LA County is coming under fire from labor unions. I spoke with Tony Bell, spokesman for Los Angeles County Supervisor Mike Antonovich, about the challenge the county is now facing if they lose this business arrangement. How many jobs are at stake with the Japanese company possibly leaving LA County?
Well, remember that this is a commitment that Kinki Sharyo, the rail car manufacturer, has made to Los Angeles County to provide upwards of 75 jobs initially, direct employment for the Antelope Valley area. But if you think about all of the impact that will have on the area with more jobs in surrounding economic areas, you know, this is going to create more need for ancillary type services, and it was a big impact for hundreds of jobs.
And how much money would this deal bring to the state?
Well, remember that California is not friendly to business at all because of some of the Sacramento's non-business friendly policies. When California sends out the red tape, Texas sends out the red carpet for business. That's why we have a problem. That's why we need to provide incentives for businesses to come here. This latest effort by the unions and the San Francisco law firm to use CEQA laws in order to send this firm away and this plant away is an example of where California is failing. It's failing our counties, it's failing our state, and our nation, because these are international firms coming to invest money here.
So what's the best solution to handle this situation and for other situations that might be similar?
Well, I know it sounds ridiculous, but we need leadership from Sacramento, where there currently is none. We need someone to step up and say, you know, enough is enough. We need to become business friendly. We need manufacturing jobs. Without business, there's no jobs. And that's just common knowledge. Governor Brown, we'd really like it if he would step up, offer some reform to our CEQA laws, and intervene in this case so we can get those jobs in the Antelope Valley, in Los Angeles County, and in our state.
I'm speaking to Tony Bell, Communications Director for LA County Supervisor Mike Antonovich. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City!
And I'm 5 3/4.
What's your favorite part of travel here?
Maybe going, looking at those big trains.
$17, $18, $19, $20. Have a good trip.
Thank you very much. Well, I drive the train. It's about an 8-minute ride. I guess my title will be a train engineer.
What if you climb over like 1, 2, 3 and then all the way in the back? What if a train breaks down?
Well, the young kids, they're like very, very excited about riding the train. They're excited to meet a train engineer. They like the whole all aboard. You know, you have like a 2-year-old, a 1-year-old, and you hear them choo-choo, choo-choo. So they're excited about the train.
Now we check in with Anna Sterling to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Anna. What can we expect on ATVN later this afternoon?
Protesters are asking the Attorney General to investigate vitamin and supplement company Herbalife. They say the company is using a pyramid scheme to rip off its workers. We'll have this and more tonight at 6 on Trojan Vision.
Wow, I've actually used Herbalife before. That's a bit scary to hear, but thanks for that update. Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Tuesday with Tiffany Walton.
I'm Rakinatha.